in a few moments, we're going to be hearing from Stephen Lenman, who is based in Chicago, Progressive. I think it's called Progressive Voice Radio. I'll get the – it's we pre-recorded it, so we'll make sure we get the information for you. And so we have Stephen Lenman coming up right now. T89.5 FM, The Taylor Report. And we're going to be speaking shortly with Stephen Lenman. And Mr. Lenman has a blog site everybody should be aware of, sjlenman.blogspot.com. And you can listen to Stephen Lenman on Progressive Radio News Hour. And he has a new book. And he is both the editor and contributor to Flashpoint in Ukraine, How the U.S. Drive for Hegemony Risks World War III. And I think we're joined now by Stephen Lenman. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am, Phil. Good to be with you. I would say to your listeners, the easy way to access my blog site is simply Googling my last name, which is the way I access it. Just Google Lenman, L-E-N-D-M-A-N. There aren't many of that name around, so you'll go right to it. I put up a number of new articles every day. I just wrote a new one about Michael Moore trying to bribe Republican electors to defect. How about that?
I look forward to that. Let me just ask my technician a moment. I'm getting a little bit of a kind of a kickback in my ear. Can you – are you noticing that? No? Okay. I think we're okay, Stephen. And I want to just say we have a crisis and it's unfolding in Syria. And I want, of course, get your views on a specific matter of the role of UN personnel in this crisis. But to begin with, I just want to ask you to help us understand the events there. You wrote an article with, I thought, a great title and an accurate one, Aleppo's Liberation Saved Thousands of Lives. Since Western media tends to picture it somewhat differently, I want to what is behind your thesis there that it is saving thousands of lives, and why should we use the word liberation?
Well, Phil, I've begun writing about what's going on in Syria when the war began in March of 2011. It's mischaracterized as a civil war. There's nothing civil about it. It's Obama's war, plotted by Hillary Clinton when she was Secretary of State. She was there from the beginning of the Obama administration until she left in 2013 ahead of her presidential campaign run. Thankfully, it failed. Otherwise, heaven knows what might happen. We certainly didn't get a jewel in her place. That's another issue entirely. If we have time, we could get into it a little bit. And, of course, today, Monday, at the 19th of December, the Electoral College votes. I expect them to go for Trump. We may know by mid-afternoon. Mm-hmm. The war in Syria is just like America's war against every other independent country. In more recent times, going back to what I call the rape of Yugoslavia under the Clinton co-presidency, and indeed it was a co-presidency. It was the Balkan Wars throughout the 1990s, and then the actual rape the end game in Yugoslavia in June in 1999 for 78 horrific days, just mass slaughter of Serbian people. Just unbelievable what went on. Just a horror, completely mischaracterized in the West. And then, of course, we have the 9/11 event and all the wars that followed thereafter. And Obama has way outdone George Bush. Bush went to war with Afghanistan and Iraq, and Obama has bombed seven countries, and one of them is Syria, bombing Syria since the middle of 2014. It began bombing Iraq and Syria. I think one in June, one in September, and I have to keep going back to check which was which. But in 2014, he began bombing both countries together with his so-called coalition partners, you know, partners in crime, not bombing ISIS or other terrorist groups, bombing government infrastructure, bombing civilian neighborhoods, massacring soldiers, Iraqi soldiers, Syrian soldiers. This is what America's bombing campaign is all about. But Russia's bombing campaign is about fighting terrorism. But the war in terrorism, the war in Syria, is fighting an invasion of U.S.-supported terrorists from scores of countries. These people are recruited. You can call them ISIS. You can call them al-Nusra, you can call them al-Qaeda, whatever name you give them, there are no moderate rebels. That's one of the big hoaxes. They simply don't exist. They're using chemical weapons, they're torturing people, they're murdering people, all under the guidance of America and its rogue allies, Russia and Syria and Iran and the Hezbollah fighters from Lebanon are the good guys in this fight. And America, Britain, France, Israel, Saudi Arabia, etc., they're the bad guys. The liberation of Aleppo was a major event. It's possible, we'll need hindsight to know, but it's possible it was the turning point in the war. That's why America tried so hard to prevent it, but it's happened.
Yeah, that was good. Actually, it was on my mind as a follow-up, which is, you know, what is holding this up? And my impression is that Kerry, Obama, and those who want to continue with this policy of regime change are trying to double down to get to save that policy, aren't they?
Well, they sure are. I mean, there's no way they're going to keep Aleppo from being liberated. It is liberated, except for scattered pockets of terrorists. And as I understand it, there have been a number of deals. Who knows what will hold and what won't hold. There were several deals that some hardline terrorists undermined and simply didn't go along with them, you know, burning buses and shelling Western Aleppo again, stuff like that, after they agreed to leave and be safely escorted out of the city to wherever they wanted to go. They just had to leave their heavy weapons behind. They could take their light arms with them, but not their heavy weapons. Well, three or four times they undermined the deal. Well, apparently it may be going through finally today, but there are very few people left in Eastern Aleppo. Oh, I have no idea what the exact numbers are, but maybe some scattered civilians, some remnants of terrorist hotliners, and there were buses to take them out again today. I've heard no report about any shelling or setting any of these buses ablaze, so maybe it really is happening this time. And then there was a resolution passed in the Security Council this morning to send in monitors from the UN, from other humanitarian groups, the International Association of the Red Cross, the Arab Red Crescent Society, maybe some other groups will be involved. Exactly what they're going to accomplish if the city is entirely liberated, I have no idea, and I don't know why Russia went along with this.
But it does become a question. At this point, here certainly in Canada, the Globe and Mail has been, and yesterday the CBC was talking about, you know, what can we do to help those poor people in East Aleppo. At this point, they're talking about armed terrorists who are playing hardball at to the very end.
But not many of them, Phil. Most of them are out. I've seen a number of reports from the Russian Conciliation Center. They're based in Syria. I've seen different numbers, but in round numbers of the remaining people in Syria, over 100,000 residents were evacuated from eastern Aleppo. Over 100,000, and then I saw a number that in the past week or so, about the last week, say since a week ago Monday, another 10,000 residents. Included among them about 3,000 terrorists evacuated from eastern Aleppo. How many people are remaining there? I don't know. We won't know until they're all out and there are inspections done to see if there's anybody left. I mean, there could be a few holdouts. They're just hiding buildings and nobody knows who they are. Of course, when they run out of food, they'll be in very, very big trouble. Mm-hmm. But let's say about 110,000 have been evacuated from eastern Aleppo, most of them civilians, maybe 5,000, 7,000, 8,000 fighters, whatever the numbers were. There'll be some final numbers published when this is all over. And the remnants apparently are coming out today. So I don't know what the media are wailing about. This is all going very well, except for America, with the terrorists America supports and their allies who support them are trying to the last moment to undermine the deal. Yeah. You can't negotiate with America. I think Russia knows that, and yet it keeps trying.
It is so bizarre. The lights now are going on in all of Aleppo. The lights are being turned on in East Aleppo, finally, because it's been liberated, except for this enclave of hardcore characters. But the lights go out on the Eiffel Tower.
It's amazing. Well, I wrote
that's
got
to be a moment.
I know they turned the lights on. Instead of celebrating the liberation of all these brutalized people, they're mourning it. And I wrote an article saying the New York Times calls Eastern Aleppo's liberation bad news.
Yeah,
that's the kind of journalism we get from the Western media.
It is a remarkable situation, and given the fact that we're sort of going through a matter of probably 48 hours, maybe 3 or 4 days of getting it resolved, there in my mind there has been a question, and thank you very much for writing an excellent article about it, and that has to do with UN personnel. I'm talking about spokespersons and people with titles, who, by the way, are not on the scene for the most part, who seem to be giving talking points to the New York Times, the Globe and Mail. I'll give you the headline here. Fall of Aleppo marks a victory for al-Assad, a meltdown for humanity, quotes. And the meltdown for humanity quote is from one of the top individuals there. I forget which one. I think it might be Mr. Mastura.
I think it was Jan England, the so-called humanitarian coordinator.
That's him. Now, you've talked about this. They're not being helpful. And by the way, this does contribute to greater danger and puts everything at risk when they talk this way.
Oh, it sure does. And, of course, they continue demonizing Syria, Syria's president, Bashar al-Assad, Russia and Iran. And as I said before, they're the good guys in this battle. They're really fighting terrorism where America is supporting it. Israel is supporting it. NATO is supporting it. The Saudis, the Qataris, the Turks, they're supporting terrorism. And Russia and company are fighting terrorism. I mean, they're really heroic for what they're doing. I believe one day Syria will be liberated. But what I'm really waiting for is to get Obama and company out of there in another month. A month from tomorrow, and get the Trump people in. He's made a lot of bold comments about wanting to cooperate with Russia in combating terrorism and having better relations with Russia. And if he does that, if he's able to survive the pressure, overcome the pressure that's being put on him to continue dirty business as usual, and he really follows through on these things that he said, I can call them pledges. Let's just say the comments that he made, saying he can get along with Putin and so on. If he really does that, that alone will make his presidency historic. And I'm rooting for him to do that. I'll praise him for what he does well, and I'll damn him for what he does badly. I mean, I'm certain there'll be an awful lot done, especially domestically, that I would very definitely disagree with, and I'll write articles very critical of him about it. But if his geopolitical agenda is more diplomacy and less war, then he's to be highly praised for that.
Yeah. I noticed Stephen Cohen was making this point, trying to explain the world to the head of Human Rights Watch, pointing out that this attitude that everything has to be now viewed through the machinations of the new Russian leadership, he says that it's just a path to war and is not going to, doesn't lead to human rights. It leads to something quite ugly. I want to ask you, here's a quote from Ban Ki-moon. He says, Aleppo is a pseudonym for hell. You know, isn't it one of the issues ought to be, should not one of the issues be, can we find UN leaders who spend less time working up provocative statements and play a more of a balanced role?
Well, the problem is that UN leaders like Ban Ki-moon and Kofi Annan before him are picked by America. So they pick people who will serve Western interests, and that's what these people have done throughout their tenure. Each of them were in, I believe, for 10 years, 2 5-year terms. Ban Ki-moon is out the end of the month. His successor has already been sworn in, so I forget his name. I wrote an article about him some weeks ago. He'll be sworn in to replace Ban in first New Year's Day. We'll see what he does, but I would expect him to do basically the same thing that Ban has been done, to be an imperial tool, to go along with Western policies, and to be against anything that goes against these policies. So I consider the UN a wholly owned subsidiary of America and its allies.
Certainly part of this is that they had a little run there when they were the only power, and they decided on this project of R2P, responsibility to protect and regime change. It appears that after Libya, Russia decided that this was getting too dangerous. And when Obama said, Assad has to go, and then he said, we think we've found an excuse to invade, which was the chemical weapons story. At that point, Putin said, you've already shown us who you are with Libya. We're not going to allow this. Not going to go along. The world's been changing since that moment, hasn't it?
Yeah, it really has. I didn't think it was a game changer when Russia came in. They came in with a modest force, and they still have a modest force. It's been explained that they have some special forces on the ground. I don't know what the numbers are. They're probably there mostly in an advisory capacity, but I think they're right there on the front lines with Syrian combat troops, so they're right there with them. And if they are there on the front lines, then they would be engaged in combat as the need might come about. But I'm certainly very skilled people, and Iran has got advisors there helping the Syrian government. I mean, Syria is a fairly small country, and the war has been going on with endless numbers of terrorists battling Syrian soldiers, massacring civilians, and so on. And, I mean, how long can soldiers fight without getting ground down? I mean, it's just astonishing. I mean, World War II, America was in it for just a few years, from 1942 to the middle of 1945, 3.5 years for World War II for America, World War I, a little over a year or so. Syrians have been at war. If it continues, it'll be 6 years in March. It's a terrible ordeal on a nation's military. If they didn't have Russia intervene responsibly the way it did, I think Syria would have gone down to defeat by now.
Mm-hmm. Well, Stephen Lenman, it's been great talking to you. You write terrific columns, and we see you, by the way, in Global Research, Counterpunch, and elsewhere. We thank you very, very much.
Phil, thank you so much.
Good to talk to you. Thank you. Bye-bye. And that was Stephen Lenman. And you do see him in Global Research. And I hope, by the way, people are reading Global Research because, by the way, they never bought any of this malarkey about what the reality was in Libya,
Syria,
etc. I
love a guy who says, this is a really good thing that Hillary Clinton lost. I mean, we we need to hear people who say that. And here's a key from the perspective of the Syrians.
perspective of potential war. Yeah. That really has been underestimated. Yeah. And it is a factor in all these European elections. If you have people who believe in what they call regime change, which is basically change international law in the name of us, the good guys, we're going to commit a crime, that is, cross a border, overfly other people's airspace, or threaten to, or order them to step down from power. That is when presidents are most dangerous. That's really the moment. And Hillary was totally without shame on that point. Obama is without. And Kerry, by the way, in the last moments of this administration, Kerry's talking like a maniac. I want to repeat what Stephen Cohen did say on Democracy Now, talking to Ken Roth. He said in September of this year, there was a common front between Obama and Putin to fight terrorists in East Aleppo. Terrorists in East Aleppo. Then there was a falling out between the on what to do because, well, frankly, the U.S. Reneged because they said, well, there are also some good guys. But they were saying there were terrorists, and overwhelmingly it is. The U.S. military always says that the fighters are controlled by al-Nusra. That's who is in East Aleppo. By the way, if you don't know who al-Nusra is, they thought it was fun and worthy of firecrackers and whatnot when the people got slaughtered in France, in Marseille. They thought that was funny. That's why I think the lights went out in Paris, the brains went out as well. You're worried about people who actually thought killing you was fun. So at any rate, he said in September this year, they had a common front, Obama and Putin, against the terrorists. He said, but when the U.S. backed out of that, he said, media across the board in Western media, including, he said, pointing at Amy Goodman, including you, your show, have all decided to call them rebels from that point forward. They were, in August, they were terrorists, and September, they became rebels. And he says, rebels are kind of a warm word in this culture. We were rebels, and et cetera. So I thought that was, to me, a knockout punch. He had it absolutely right. Once Obama set the line, the media fell in line and began to just march in step with him. So that was... That's a shocker and an education. I hope Stephen Cohen points out, by the way, if Human Rights wants to do something nice, they should protect people who are trying to speak out against this war talk against Russia, because he said we're being persecuted now. Our jobs are threatened. People are telling us, you're a traitor if you say that you don't want to see a confrontation with Russia.